Now I'm hearing it twice. Two idiotics are better than one. Good morning, everybody. Hey, look, it's Henry.
Oh, look at that Henry go. Oh my gosh, Henry wore a tie.
It's kind of stuck. Been stuck since the 80s.
Okay. So it's retro cool then, yeah.
It'll come back eventually.
Could be worse. You could have been stuck with bell bottoms there, Henry, and and then they would look a little dated most of the time. So anyway. Good morning, folks. How's everybody doing?
Doing great. How you doing? How are you guys doing?
We're doing awesome. Thanks to Henry for that guest appearance.
Hey, that's if you're going to have dancing, you're going to have Henry the puppet. It's just there was no way that happened.
No kidding.
Henry has fans.
Well, I mean, Trish is giving him a shout out right there in the chat already. She recognized him right away. So, folks, we have Adam Weisblatt with us here today. Adam, give our folks a sense of who you are, where you come from, that kind of a thing before we get started and jump in.
Sure. So, thanks, guys, for having me. Been on shows with you guys in the past, and it's always good to keep that conversation going. My name is Adam Weisblatt. I'm with a consulting Blank Page Learning, and I provide a business analysis, business strategy for learning and development organizations, especially around implementing technology and adapting their business processes to mm-hmm. how they use the technology.
Cool.
Sort of after they've implemented everything and everyone goes, now what do we do?
How do we use it?
We've signed all the contracts.
We're phase two.
Yeah. What should we be doing? So, and we used, in this week's title, we have the word ontologies. And I noticed, Brent, you set up a poll today.
Yes.
Maybe get the folks in the audience, if you're just joining us, maybe jump, folks, if you see the poll, maybe just jump in there and provide your response to it before we bring that in. Because Brent and I were going back and forth a bit about, you know, how to describe today's session. And we really did, we really bounced around on the word ontology because we wanted it in the title because it's key to what we're talking about here today, but it's also not super well known to a lot of people. So maybe it's Brent,
it's the least known buzzword.
Exactly. It's more of a bzzz word than a buzz, you know. Brent, maybe you want to review the voting here and tell us about the poll here. Let's get started with that.
Yeah, so it looks like a lot of folks have heard about it, and it keeps getting higher and higher. We got about 70% of people said yes. I forgot how I worded the question. Did you need to Google ontologies was how I worded the question. Okay. And so 70% said yes.
Yeah.
So 25% is around no.
And well, the other group is still firing up Google.
They're doing it right now. Yes.
Yeah. As long as they're not Googling Google, then, you know, we'll get there eventually. Yeah. No, I mean, we're still hovering, even as more votes come in, we're still hovering around 70% ish on that. I needed help knowing what the word even was. So, and Brent and I being really, you know, fond of dad jokes, we struggled to even find a funny pun or something to include in it. We were trying to, so
I love dad jokes,
but we couldn't quite get there. So
there was someone on Twitter who did a, a parody of, don't know much about geography, but he was like, don't know much about ontology. Yeah. That's cute.
Oh, that's beautiful. Nice. That's fabulous.
Love it. Yeah, we got to find that.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's something that I've recently gotten turned on to and just got totally geeked out about it. And I'm like, well, where else am I going to find a group of people I can geek out on something with except for, you know, this group here? So,
yep, perfect. Yep. Hands up in the crowd if you consider yourself a geek. Let's hear a shout out to anybody who's would categorize them in that themselves in that category. So having introduced the word ontologies, I guess let's start talking about it. Now, Adam, you brought in, you did bring in a slide deck to sort of guide us through all of this. Would it make sense to switch over to that, or do you want to talk a little bit before that?
Yeah, I think I need the slide deck, because when I've talked to people about this, it has been a little confusing. And the thing is that normally I'd say, oh, well, okay, so this is a bit too esoteric, I'm going to drop it. But I just feel like this is something that learning and development needs. I mean, Brent has been talking about for years about how we get our terminology completely mixed up. And I think this is a route, this is a door that we haven't opened before that could get us to being able to work out our terminology. And so, but I think that the way to get people to understand it is to tell a story. So I've got a deck that does that.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, let's jump right in.
Let's jump right into sharing that. I'm even thinking of last week's conversation with Sam Rogers, where he talked about having to even define what completed means to different groups within an organization, for example. So there are lots of even words that we think and things that we think we all agree on have a range of potential definitions and uses.
Oh, yeah. Courses, completions, like Sam said. By the way, Sam does show up in this story.
So ah, cool.
Perfect segue.
Nice.
So the thing is that I'm a consultant, so I can't come right out and tell you the thing I'm going to tell you. I have to take you along the scenic route. I hope you guys don't mind.
Not at all. We love the scenic route.
Right. So people ask me what I do, and my kids, and you know, lots of people, and it's always pretty complicated. I'm a business analyst specializing in enabling L&D organizations to leverage learning technology to improve learners' experiences. Take a breath. And you know, people also ask me, so how do you, what do you do to prepare for a career in business analyst specializing in enabling L&D organizations leverage, blah, blah. And the answer is very simple, art school. Because if you go to art school, you can develop very special skills, very special set of skills that can help you with this. So in art school, I learned about philosophy, because you can't really make art without being able to shoot off some philosophy about, you know, the meaning of what you're doing. So you're searching for meaning with philosophy. I've been a cartoonist since elementary school, but I went to school for cartooning. And cartooning is a very interesting thing, because expressing these complex ideas in a very small number of symbols. Lines. If you notice my little doggy here with the little lines around his ears, we all know that that's code for meaning that the ears are wiggling. But you know, so it's more like a language than even in an art form. And you know, my guidance counselor in high school would be so proud, because I gave up all that to go into performance art, because once I finally had this meaning and a technique for explaining the meaning, I had to convince everybody that everything is meaningless. And so people also ask me, so these skills are very interesting. Now, where would you go for a job with those kind of skills? And the answer is obvious, corporate L&D, right? Because the skills work out to be the same. Business analysis is the learning in the business processes. Visualization is what we use for diagramming that complex meaning and communicating it to other people. And anyone who's worked on an LMS implementation knows that it's pretty much like performance art. I can't imagine anybody disagreeing with me on that one. So here's where Sam Rogers comes in, because we have to talk about ontologies. Remember ontologies? Yeah. So Sam Rogers, about 5 months ago, put a post on LinkedIn saying, hey, I'm looking for examples of data models and enterprise ontologies. And my eyes went buggy, because I was like, wait a minute, enterprise ontologies. I mean, I know what an enterprise is. It's this big, you know, corporate thing. And I know what ontologies are, because, you know, Aristotle and ontologies, the search for the study of being, but I could not figure out how they got together. So I geeked out and I did some research, and now I'm finally able to give you a definition of an ontology as it relates to knowledge management. And sometimes ontology is called like a knowledge graph. So you may see this and say, oh, but wait a minute, that's also called other things. Typical. So it's a framework for defining the entities in a knowledge domain and the relationships between those entities. Those relationships are important. So if I give the simplest example here, if we have learners and we have learning experiences, what's the relationship between them? The learner accesses the learning experience. And from those relationships, you can build up very complex data. So I was pretty excited about this and decided to study some more history on it. So yes, we have Aristotle with ontology being the study of being, and he was trying to put the whole universe into his book of the physics and the metaphysics and the categories and the problem with that is you start creating these categories and putting things into them, and you can wind up with like extra categories that don't make any sense, what I call mislaziness. But in the 60s and 70s, when artificial intelligence started coming out, technology started adopting the idea because they needed to understand categories and concepts. They needed to explain categories and concepts to machines. Then Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, in the early part of this century, said, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there and it's going to be useless unless we can make sense of it. So we created the semantic web. And part of the semantic web, this need to basically tag content so that it's more usable, part of it was ontologies, a language, a formal language for describing how concepts relate to each other. It kind of floated around, you know, people have gotten in and out of doing this kind of work. So the question is, first of all, why, right? Why am I interested? I'm interested because L&D really needs this. We just sit in meetings forever, and most of our meetings are arguments about terminology. In my department we call it this, in my department we call it that. But the problem with terminology is that there's different ways of describing things. You can have a glossary where you have just terms and definitions, but there's no context. A taxonomy has context, and because it has a hierarchy, but once you get down far into the hierarchy, it starts getting muddled because not everything fits into a hierarchy. There are terms that relate to each other in circular and different fashions. What an ontology does for us is that we can now talk about the things, a person, a course, a class, an instructor, a manager, and relate them to each other so that there's no restrictions that a taxonomy would do. So the question is, okay, well, if this has all been happening for the past 2,000 years, Adam, why are you talking about it now? right? So you guys, have you looked for a particular technology or a car lately? Have any of you guys looked for a car lately? And all of a sudden, when you're driving down the road, what do you see? You see that car
all the time.
All over the place, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's because that's how our brain works, right? It looks for the thing it's thinking about. And so suddenly I start looking at all this ontology stuff, and I see it everywhere. And I'm seeing that marketing people are using content mapping for their content management systems and for their campaigns for getting content out onto the web to promote their brand. I was talking to a friend who is in pharmaceuticals where everything has to be SOPs and documents and documents and documents and the hierarchy of those documents. And now suddenly they're using process mapping instead of SOPs. Mm. And then databases, are always morphing, and one new morphing of databases is this thing called graph databases, which are basically related nodes of data that can be, you know, extended indefinitely. And so I was like, oh, you know, when you start seeing this stuff around, I think it means that there's a need that's being, you know, that people are looking to fill. So this whole graph database thing made me think about learning data, because learning data, you know, everybody is always frustrated with. And you know, the thing about, like, Sam last week had some great things to say about learning analytics and about how you really have to think through what you want, and that thinking through what you want is always the hard part. You know, everyone goes, oh my God, we've got to get some learning out. We need a spreadsheet. And they start creating a spreadsheet. I hope you guys are enjoying my names of people and courses here. It starts very simple. You know, Bob Epin took poodle fluffing and Shirley Wright took wombat watering. And you start putting stuff in your spreadsheet. As you put more and more stuff, more and more columns, you wind up with all these empty fields. And it becomes crazy when you try to edit the thing. So, you know, I've gone into companies, you know, for many years doing this, and they're always like, hey, could you do a Microsoft Access database about this? And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. Relational databases, they're great, because now you put like data in like boxes, right? So you got a people box and a completion box and a courses box, and you can relate them to each other through these IDs. The problem is it starts getting bogged down, because it's very hard for the computers to keep going back and cycling through. Imagine having a list of all people and their managers. You've got to go back through the people list like, you know, 100,000 times, and it bogs it down. LMSs have thousands of these boxes. No wonder they get so like wonky, right? So what the database people said is, let's just create relationships between the individual entities, learners, completions, learning experiences, managers, and let the system keep cycling through that. And it's going to be a lot more efficient and a lot faster. So I was like, okay, here we go. This I think is going to help us, especially with our integrations with HR. So I was like geeking out, and I was like, yay, I'm going to make a learning ontology, because Sam asked for learning ontologies and I really did not find any. So I was like, I'm going to create something that describes every single component of everything we do, and I'm going to make it so logical and it'll be great. And people just looked at it and went, huh? Their eyes glazed over, because it was just too complicated, because learning is complicated. So I was like, okay, all right. Let me focus in on a particular use case. How about compliance training, which is really kind of, you know, hard to do and complicated, and people, you know, think that the auditors are going to, you know, come in with a SWAT team and, you know, put them in a half Nelson. So this would help, right? So I, you know, basically show how compliance works and all the different components to it. And people looked at it and went, huh? So I thought, okay, I need to like market this better. What I need is a mythical creature, like a unicorn. And people were like, ooh, this sounds good. So I'm going to describe three mythical creatures for you in the learning and development space and show you how ontologies can help. And I'm kind of throwing a lot of stuff at you. Brent and Chris, do we have any questions or comments?
No, both the chat and the question panel have been pretty quiet so far. I think folks are
stunned.
I think they're absorbing. And not going to lie, just as you described, the reaction I had for the last couple of screens was, whoa, that's a lot, which is, you know, I think basically the basic human reaction to that sense of so much going on. So,
yeah. So let's go through these mythical creatures, because I think people are going to be able to relate to them, because they're about what people have always wanted in L&D. So the first thing I call the Ultra Report. I used to call it an Uber Report, but then Uber came along. But this is the Ultra Report. I have been asked for this report by every client I've had over the past couple of decades, and it doesn't exist. It's a unicorn. It's it's everything to everybody. So I want to be able to show at the very top level, you know, what training people were supposed to take and what they did take. But I want to drill down by sales, but then I want to drill down by location, but then I want to drill down by person, and I want the person's date. Like, I want to keep drilling down because I want to see what I want to see. And everyone looks at it and goes, yeah, that's exactly what I want. And I'm like, yeah, you can't have it. And the reason you can't have it is because the data doesn't support it. The data that you get from HR, if you look at the bottom left-hand side, the data that you get from HR is going to have, you know, all these people, but a lot of missing data. So it's not always going to show you exactly how all these things relate. But if you create it in a graph, then it's okay if you have missing data because it'll show what you have, as opposed to like a relational database. The data engine will traverse across these relationships and build you a hierarchy that you could then represent in this slide. So I haven't built this yet, but this is my proposal that given enough time and effort and hands, that you could take this technology and build that mythical creature. The other thing is, in the middle, the whole way that courses and tasks and learners and regulations are related to each other could then be represented in data, so that it could be represented in this chart. And then another one is, you know, we all get hung up on classes and e-learning and virtual learning and the different delivery methodologies, but actually what we're doing is we're deploying, and it really doesn't matter what the delivery methodology is, as long as we deployed it at a certain time and it met certain requirements. So you can kind of put a lot of business logic into this that I think could be very helpful. So that's one mythical creature. Let's take a look at another one, the recommendation engine. Everyone wants this. They want it to work just like Amazon. Problem with Amazon is it's Amazon. They're monstrous, and they've got so much data that they can tell you, hey, you know, people who clicked on that and asked for that and looked up that usually bought this, because they have enough data behind it. We don't have as much data, but we also don't have the logic in it. So if we could create data where the user has activity that we've logged, like say with XAPI, and other users have activity, and then we can show statistically that those people took those courses, therefore you should. Now you've got a recommendation engine, and you could have that sitting behind, say, a chatbot or, you know, something like, you know, a learning experience platform. And then the last one I want to do is skills management. Skills is all the rage, but it makes sense. The, you know, skills is how people do their work, and people just want to be able to do their work. The question is that what work am I supposed to be doing? So we need to say the person, say we want to do it for future job. Well, let me start on the left-hand side. One of the problems is these learning experience platforms come in and they say, well, we could do skills. So you'll enter the skills and say what skills are taught by what courses, and we'll do the rest. And the learning department goes, oh, well, we don't know the answer to that. And so I think if you had a way of capturing that data, you know, it would be more useful to those tools. Assessments are basically demonstrations of whether you have a skill or not. So if we took the assessment and said, okay, well, how does that relate to the skill? Which questions relate to which part of the skill? We could then have a trackable way of figuring out whether our assessments are actually doing the right assessments. And then in the talent space on the right-hand side, what if a person wants a new job? You know, that new job that they're trying to get, do they have the skills for it? And the role requires the skill. The person has or doesn't have the skill. And then, you know, you can figure out whether they're eligible for the role. So you can do it at all these kind of micro and macro levels. On the micro level, you could do it with instructional design and needs assessment, right? Where you're saying, okay, what knowledge entities do I want to cover in this e-learning course, and how do they relate to each other? And that could inform how the course is designed. And on the macro scale, you know, our corporation needs people who have more digital agility. So how does digital agility break down into, you know, smaller skills, and do our people have them? Mm-hmm. And do we have courses to teach them?
Let's back up to the first unicorn, and maybe we'll just check in with folks on each one of these in sequence. Tracy in the chat actually said that her group, we've made that report with Tableau. It starts at a high level and drills down to individual. And maybe Tracy, can you give us a sense of the effort that was put into that? Because I think one of the things we all struggle with in L&D is just the hours available to do both things like making learning of some sort, learning experiences to help meet these needs, but also then, you know, who's got the budget, whether that's people, staff, time, et cetera, to be able to go beyond that, to do this level of, reporting. We tend to see, often anyway, in our world, people are expecting, the training department does the training, but maybe there isn't even, often budgeted time or even budget period to be able to do these, going beyond on that front.
Also, I want to clarify my statement that you couldn't, that this can't be done. Visually can be done. So Tableau, Google Graphs and all these tools have the ability to do this drill down if you've got the data. It's the data that's hard to get. And I'm not saying it's impossible to get that data, but the way L&D organizations work with their IT and HR counterparts today makes it really extremely challenging.
Yeah.
That's what I'd love to hear if somebody has done this, because, that would be
great. Yeah, and Mr. J in the chat has also said, we have this report. So maybe just quickly in the chat, Tracy or Mr. J or anyone else, I mean, were there barriers to this or problems or challenges in getting this done? So Mr. J is saying, we pull the data for each offering by group, then combine in Excel. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think the question is, though, it's about geeking out on this stuff. I just think most L&D folks, most training managers, most training departments don't take it to this level. That's why I was kind of tongue in cheek saying Tracy is a bit of a unicorn, because everyone's capable of doing this kind of a chart and digging deeply. But to somebody else's point, Mr. J, you ought. And I was going to bring this up earlier too. You have to export all the data that you want out of a whole bunch of other systems, put it into something like Tableau or Excel, and then slice and dice it however you want. And if you have that skill set, that's fantastic. But most people don't have that skill set. So it's like they just call up their LMS vendor and just say, hey, people want XYZ report. And the LMS vendor says, oh yeah, that's super easy. Just export it and put it into Excel and slice and dice it however you want. And
every month.
Yeah. And Tracy,
every month it gets people.
Yeah. Tracy is pointing out the data is key. She says they all have all the necessary data in their LMS. But then you do have to have an L&D person with a Tableau skill set to move it on. 100,000 employees in their group, roughly 4 million lines of training data. So there's sheer volume too, of going. And I was phrasing, as budget and time, but it's also skill set then, that could be a barrier to people. Tracy says, we built a feed that runs 3 times a week to an FTP and then load the files into Tableau prep and it feeds the dashboard from there. So repetitive stuff.
Yeah. You can automate it. But again, it's a skill set. It's an IT skill set that most L&D professionals just do not have.
Yeah. Susan's noting. Go ahead, Adam. Just follow up.
No, I was just saying, I have built things like this, but once the people realize the labor involved, they sometimes back off, or, the missing data is usually very hard. So I shouldn't have said you can't have this or that it's a unicorn, but it's hard. But I'm very impressed that people have been doing this. This is very encouraging.
But it's still, at the end of the day, it's still a little bit different, I think. If we circle back around to ontologies, I think it's different than that sort of a relational database, I think, isn't necessarily the same thing as what we're talking about in as far as defining relationships between the terms and crafting this ontology that we can all accept and be a part of, right?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of friction in doing this with the current tools that could be smoothed out by having an understanding of the terms. Because if you wanted to do this from scratch, and even if you found somebody who had the skills to do this, you'd have to explain to them, well, how does safety training relate to sales? You'd have to explain to them all these relationships so that they would be able to build it. And I think having ontology as a language to explain those relationships would make it a lot easier for the technology, with the people with those skills, to do the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Susan had a comment in the chat a couple of minutes ago about hiring a student summer IT student summer intern to get the report started out, and then using Power BI, getting Power BI dashboards built. Then the student taught them how to maintain it. So that's, I guess, one way of going through it. And Tracy also points out, she says, my team's also 100% learning technology. We have the luxury of not focusing on developing training, but making the learning systems hum. So the word luxury sounds about right there for a lot of teams. Yeah. A lot of organizations don't have that level of recognition of the importance of this. So.
Yeah, and by the way, we've had, for anybody, and Tracy's mentioning Tableau, we've had one of my favorite Tableau experts on Idiotic before, talking about data and doing data visualization. And he does workshops as a consultant and does training stuff all the time. But sadly, all of a sudden, his name is escaping me. And he's an amazing jazz bass player, too, by the way.
Yeah, somebody will remember.
Yeah, somebody quick Google Tableau and
jazz bass players.
Yeah.
Is there an ontology for that?
Yeah, right. So one of the conversations that you and I had also around this was around understanding if we start to practice and understand how what an ontology looks like. So a visualization of an ontology, for example, that this also could apply to instructional design work. So when we're looking at a very complex topic or a skill set within a job, for example, if as a consultant, and we walk in and we say, or they say, this particular, workforce area needs, they just need a lot of training. And sometimes that's as generic as you get as a consultant, right? They're like, we're just bringing you in to be a trainer. And then you got to sit there and figure out, okay, what needs to be trained? And I think building and crafting an ontology of the people that work in it and the terms that they use, the software that they use, the physical processes that they use, and crafting that visually, as opposed to just making a list, a hierarchical sort of list or whatever. Oh, okay. They use Microsoft Office, whatever, every week. Okay. What features do they use? Okay. So they got to be trained on all that stuff. Okay, great. What's their business process? Okay. You make a lot of lists when you're doing this work initially, but how they relate to each other, part of the overall process and the workflow, I think this is where ontologies really started to get interesting for me when I started thinking this through after you and I had talked.
Yeah, I think we community do this naturally. When we do our needs assessments, we say, so what do you do all day? And they're like, oh, I make these things. And, who do you give them to? Where did you get it from? How did they get to you? And how did it get from you to the next person? We're asking about the relationships between tasks and people and the next task. And we just do that naturally, but we don't always have the tool to take with that in our heads and put it onto paper. And I think just this idea of diagrams where the line, where the nodes and the connectors have metadata, have information about them that can create this rich view of a knowledge domain. That's why I like the term knowledge graph, because it's a little less esoteric than ontologies. But I think that having that tool can help us do what we're already good at.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. When you were back at the a couple slides back, you know, defining, you know, the thing and then the arrows between them being the relationship, that is, you know, the type of relationship, right? Best demonstrated here. Perfect. Yeah. So, and how one connects to the other. So that's when it starts to define. And then if you look at this really closely, this is a great one. Perfect segue. Mm-hmm. That you all of a sudden now you're starting to also define your XAPI statement, because, you know, the person, the or the actor, the verb, and the thing being, you know, acted on or whatever, but you're also starting to define your instructional objectives too, to a certain extent, or at least you're getting closer to it, right?
And now you see why I got excited about this, because XAPI is built on the exact same fundamental concepts. And so, you know, we've struggled figuring out how to work XAPI into what we do. And I think this is one way, because now we've got a tool that captures data this way, and we've got a language for planning out how we're going to use that tool.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work being done by different sort of industry, I'm going to use the word silos, but different industry focuses to be able to sort of standardize on common language for that, you know, medical area field or whatever, on how to use XAPI, what the different actions, et cetera, all mean within the context of those particular either industries or fields, et cetera. ADL has been coordinating those kinds of ongoing discussions as well. So XAPI does seem to show a lot of promise and a lot of relationship to this stuff for sure.
Yeah. So it's, you know, definitely a work in progress. You know, I'm just getting started with this. I'm really just curious as to what people would want to do with this, you know, with this idea. So I'm glad I got to, I was thinking I wanted to kind of bring this out, but I thought I wasn't ready because I'm still kind of finding my way through. And then Brent said, hey, come on and talk about it. I'm like, you know, let me talk about it, because I love our community. You know, everyone's so supportive and geeky and innovative that I figured just, you know, get this spark of an idea into people's heads, and I bet you some cool stuff will happen.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if anybody in our group here today has any thoughts on or has any other unicorns that they have in mind that they might want to throw into the mix to consider whether this might be a valuable resource for this too. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just reading Paul's chat here. Paul says, do not have the resources for another If You Build It, They Will Come project. For the three times a year someone from operations asks for this level of data, it is better ROI to do it clumsily as needed. Organizational culture eats strategy and programs every time. Yeah, there's that.
Yes.
You know, there's only so much of us to go around.
Right.
And at times we have to sort of figure out sometimes just how to prioritize that. And yeah. We don't all have that luxury, as Tracy described it, of having that that skill set and an organization that actually obviously values that and makes that happen for us. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of different applications that at different levels of scale. So just simply disambiguating terms. My favorite part of Wikipedia are the disambiguation pages. Like, you know, look up some vague term and they'll explain how it relates in different contexts. We sit in these meetings, like I said before, where everyone's arguing over terminology, and I'm just like, just agree to something. It doesn't matter whether it's right or not. Agree to something that's useful. And I think that a tool like this could just help disambiguate a term like force versus module versus, you know, session versus class and so mm-hmm. on. Then all the way up to the high level, you know, if you've got the resources, to Paul's point where, you know, maybe that's not where you're at, but at least if you had some basic tool to help express where you need to be, then when you go to build that big, you know, ultra report, you've got somewhere to start.
Mm-hmm. Andrea has tossed in a note. We tend to take the proactive view. If we provide it before they ask for it, it makes it easier to identify when issues are likely to come up or highlight where things are working or not working as expected. And I think that's a lot of, this is what, you know, what even what Sam was talking about last week was that a lot of the value in being able to pull these data out and then do more further, you know, detailed analysis and data reporting on it is it's the opportunity to find problems that you might not see, but the data is showing that there's something that needs to be addressed and looked at. So yeah, very cool. Well, I see that Brent he's been coming and going as the admin. Mm. He's also in with his own individual in there as well, but probably a good point for us to wrap up, but now I'm scratching my head. How do we close it up when I'm not the admin? I don't know how to turn this off for today's session. Plus Brent's got the music. I don't have the music handy. I know. Let's all fake the theme song, gang, as we and wave our way.
Gotta be able to adapt to ambiguity.
There we go. Hey, like maybe we could get Henry to come in and help us close out today's session. As always, Adam, thanks so much for joining us today. I know that you're only one-handed at the moment, but if you've got a chance and want to drop in your contact info or places where people connect with you into the chat, that will help folks. Oh, there's Brent. There's Brent back. Just in time to run the music, Brent. We're not hearing.
I was just gonna say, don't quit yet, guys. Don't quit yet. I'm on my way.
Awesome, Brent. Let's play the music on out. And Adam, again, thanks so much for joining us this week. Lots of stuff to think about here, and a great connection with last week's session with Sam Roberts as well. If folks didn't join us for that, that's available for review as well. So
let's keep this conversation going around ontologies, and you can use the hashtag IDIODC on Twitter, and we can talk more about it if everybody wants to jump in there and do it. But in the meantime, yeah, let's dance.
Thanks to everyone who was on the chat.
Very cool. Thanks so much. Yeah, we always have some great thoughts and some great experiences being shared in that chat. We love it. It's the best part of what we get to do here. So, guys, thanks so much. We will see you next week.
I'm just glad I didn't have to hum.
Me too. Personally, not you, Henry. You would have carried it, Henry. It would have been my problem. I would have brought us down.
Hey, Henry, can you whistle?
Nope.
All right, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.